naps for night nurses, specialist nurses, town nurses, and a look at household cleaner poisonings. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this week's episode of The Nursing Show program. I want to especially welcome all of the brand new listeners to The Nursing Show out there, and I know there are quite a few of you because apparently the rest of you have been helping out and spreading the word about The Nursing Show, and I appreciate that very, very much. The Nursing Show is a community effort, and I want to urge everybody to contribute and participate in that community. Head over to the Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com. Check out the articles that are posted over there midweek, as well as the links in every episode's show notes. That's the way you can get back and check on the information you hear here on The Nursing Show. And that's important because it's really your job to follow up on some of the high points that I'm able to touch on here on the show. It's your job to make sure that you know how it fits into your specific nursing practice. Of course, all of the long-term listeners that have contributed their comments and suggestions are greatly appreciated. These are the ways that I come up with ideas on what you want to hear on the show. So if there's a topic you'd like to have covered, maybe something you encountered recently that reminded you that you needed to review some material, I'm sure there are other nurses out there that feel the same way. So share your thoughts with me here at The Nursing Show. You can do that by sending an email to comments@nursingshow.com and let me know what you'd like to see on The Nursing Show, a topic that perhaps you'd like to see covered, and I'll get right on it and add it to a future episode of The Nursing Show. Those of you who visited the site this week found the article that was written talking about talking with teens about their health care and some of the resources that I found online to specifically deal with talking with teens about certain things. There's a couple of different articles I linked to in that site and one journal article specifically talking about educating teens about workplace safety. All of these things can be found over at the Nursing Show site. There's also another article looking at the Wii Fit, something that's new in my household, but is an interesting side effect of this new gaming platform that's been out for about a year now, is that people are using it in ways that maybe weren't originally expected. It's not just a game platform anymore, it's your own personal training system. And I wonder in this article that I posted this week about the applications in the healthcare setting. So check out those articles and look forward to other articles like them in future weeks here on The Nursing Show. I'm going to lead off with a look at a study that was reported on recently at the 22nd annual meeting of the Associated Professional Sleep Societies, and the paper was presented there looking at the impact on healthcare of patients and the health of providers in the hospital and facility settings when they are allowed to get restorative naps during night shifts. And anybody that's ever worked an overnight shift understands how it just messes with your internal clock. It tends to impact you in many ways that are often unseen. And physiologically, we understand that this impacts your immune system, impacts your ability to be rested, because you just aren't built to sleep during the day. Most people aren't anyway. And so it's hard for people to adjust to a rotating schedule or a nighttime schedule for an extended period of time. What the study purports is that it is important to provide the opportunity for a restorative nap in the middle of an overnight shift, that just a short nap can have a positive impact on the person's ability to perform at peak levels when needed. And this impacts specifically in this study, that they looked at critical care nurses and the fact that they're trained to provide some relatively specialized nursing care. They need to make rapid decisions and perform advanced assessment and use advanced procedures and motor skills. And when they do this at night shift situations and are dealing with sleep deprivation, this can threaten the health and safety of the patients. We've seen similar studies like this looking at the impact on the physician community and long shifts required of residents. And they're looking at the way that this impacts even the normal 10 or 12 hour overnight night shift for nurses as well. So I think it's important that we look at this, and it's going to require an institutional shift in mindset, because you're going to have to find a way to allow somebody to get that half hour or 20 minute short nap and get a chance to restore their brains a little bit. So we're going to follow up on this. You'll find links to this article in the show notes, and I'll be talking about this more as other studies like it come out. Another article about specialized nursing care caught my eye, and it's looking at the positive effects of specialist nurses, specifically in the radiation therapy environment. But I think that you could probably extrapolate that specialized nursing care could be positive and beneficial for patients in a variety of settings. In this particular study that was presented recently in the Journal of Clinical Nursing, they looked at the use of a clinical nurse specialist leading and handling patient consultation and dealing with symptom management for patients experiencing and receiving radiation therapy. And what they found was that the patients in the clinical nurse specialist environment were better managed and had good symptom management, which is, of course, so important in anybody receiving radiation therapy, chemotherapy, or any other really invasive or hard, physiologically hard therapies on the body. Patients that can manage their symptoms well, their side effects well, are much more likely to have a positive outcome, or at least minimize the downturn that they experience from the side effects. Often the cure is worse than the disease in some of these situations, and patients sometimes make decisions based on their perceived ability to manage some of these negative side effects. And I think nursing care provides a great opportunity to help patients mitigate some of these challenges. Now, this particular study looked at a relatively small patient population, so I think it's a good opportunity for others to take the ball and run with it in a larger study and a larger patient size, population size. But certainly, it's a good starting point. One of the things that the patient specifically mentioned was the fact that they felt that they had developed a better relationship and a better rapport with the clinical nurse specialist that they were dealing with, and that they felt that they spent more time learning about their specific issues. And I think that's one of the things that makes nursing care so important in any environment where patients are receiving these kind of heavy and invasive therapies. I'll wrap up with a look at a story on another type of specialist nurse, and this is not necessarily in the facility or traditional clinical setting, but more in the public health sector. Lincoln, Massachusetts is looking at the possibility of having a town nurse. In previous years, the local school nurse also assisted with some public health problems in the town, and the school nurse is now saying that her duties are much too busy in the school setting to really leave the facility that she works in and get out into the community and do blood pressure checks and other public health-based initiatives in the town like she used to. She's proposing that the town go ahead and hire a town nurse to handle that type of duty. And I think this is an interesting look at another way that nurses can impact their communities in a positive way and work locally in a non-traditional setting. What she's saying is that the town nurse could be involved in handling such issues as dealing with the administration of an annual flu vaccine clinic, attending emergency planning committees for the town to plan for emergencies and evacuations and disaster planning, Also, occasionally working with residents to take blood pressures, following up with residents who've received lab reports to make sure they understand the results and know when to follow up with their physician, and also to just check in and follow up with residents who may be at risk and need someone to check in on them periodically. The school nurse was previously doing this, and she's now proposing that these duties are just a bit much on top of her other duties in the school setting, and is looking at finding a way to get funding through the town to have a town nurse. And I think this is an interesting look at just another way that nurses can impact the communities in which they live. So I'll be following up on this and letting you know more about this. If you know of a community in your region that has a local town nurse, someone that's maybe outside the state or even county health department setting, but is really providing that local community-based care that in years past, years gone by, maybe 50, 60, 70 years ago, were provided by a town physician, now can be provided by a town nurse, that overall general public health setting that allows nurses to really shine in this element. Time for this week's tip and trick of the week, and this week we're going to be rejoining our friend Lisa Booz from Maryland Poison Control, and she's going to be discussing household cleaners and household cleaner poisonings with us here on the show. So without further ado, let's jump over and talk with Lisa. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm back here with another episode segment of the Toxicology Minute, and I have our friend Lisa Booz online with me here from Maryland Poison Control. Lisa, it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So I'm always waiting. It's springtime here, and I'm wondering what you have for us.
Well, I thought with the start of spring, everybody likes to start spring cleaning. And so one of the items that people will use are cleaners, household cleaners. And around this time, occasionally we'll see an increase or a spike in calls to the poison center with kids and adults who have been exposed to these cleaners. There are literally hundreds of different types of cleaners that we use. People would have maybe one cleaner, maybe two cleaners in their home. Now there's a cleaner for everything, and if you look under someone's sink, there might be 20 different cleaners under there capable or for children to get into. In 2006, there were more than 214,000 poisonings with household cleaners that were reported to poison in the U.S., and more than half of those involved children less than six. There are many reasons why people can be poisoned by cleaners. Children are sometimes drawn to the brightly colored containers and the liquids. They might smell good, so they draw the child to the container because of that. They might have a fruity odor or a floral type of odor. By law, all products that have concentrations of caustics more than 2% must be in child-resistant containers, but poisonings do occur often when the child is around the parent or the caretaker while the product is in use. So the lid is actually not on the container. The child will pick it up and drink out of it. Sometimes the top is on, but it hasn't been on properly. It hasn't been screwed on completely, so the child-resistant mechanism is just not there. And most unfortunate and preventable cause of poisoning is when someone drinks from a beverage container like a soda bottle, only to realize afterwards that their mouth is starting to burn, and so they know that it contains something other than a beverage. We see a lot of people who bring industrial cleaners, which are much more caustic and much more dangerous than household cleaners, but they'll bring them home from work, and they'll put them in soda bottles or water bottles or milk containers, and to a child or even an unsuspecting adult, they may pick up this bottle and drink out of it, only to find out that it's a pretty strong cleaner afterwards. And then still other adults will drink cleaners intentionally, as in suicide attempts. There are a lot of different types of cleaners. The ones that create the most problems are caustics, and caustics can be either acids or they can be alkaline corrosives. Now, acids have low pHs, so if you test it, the product with pH paper, the pH would be on the order of 1 to 2, so on the low end of the scale. And the chemicals that are acidic or very acidic are chemicals like sulfuric acid, hydrochloric acid, phosphoric acid, and there are many others. And they're found in drain cleaners, car batteries, toilet bowl cleaners, metal cleaners, and again, these industrial-type products. Acids produce pretty severe burns on the skin and the eyes if they're splashed or they're spilled. Alkaline corrosives can do that as well. Now, acids are a little bit different than alkaline corrosives. Alkaline corrosives are found in drain cleaners, oven cleaners, denture cleaners, bathroom cleaners. They're also found in hair relaxers, and they have a pH upper scale, like up around 12 to 14, and they include the chemical sodium hydroxide, that's also known as lye, potassium hydroxide, and sodium carbonate. These alkaline corrosives or these alkaline cleaners are, when they're ingested, they produce what's called a liquefaction necrosis. And basically what that means is that it causes the proteins and the collagen and substances that are on the mucosa that it touches, causes them to dissolve, and it allows pretty deep penetration burns into the mucosal tissue. And it primarily affects the esophagus. And these burns in the esophagus can be quite severe. Acids, on the other hand, produce burns that are called a coagulation necrosis. So that causes destruction of the tissue on the surface, and it sort of prevents severe burns from penetrating. Acids also don't affect the esophagus as much as they do the stomach, so a little bit different as far as the area that they burn. Of course, in either case, you can see burns throughout the GI tract, but mostly acids affect the stomach, where the alkaline corrosives affect the esophagus. Bleach is another product that we get calls about, and bleach contains hypochlorites, usually sodium hypochlorite, and that's an alkaline caustic, but household bleach is pretty dilute, and so it really doesn't cause caustic injury unless a very, very large amount is ingested, such as what you might see in a suicide attempt. But unintentional ingestions of household bleach by children or adults usually only produce some nausea and vomiting, maybe a little oral irritation, and that's usually about it. With large amounts or with industrial bleaches, you can see some burns of the esophagus, so they act very much like all the other alkaline corrosives. And one of the acids that I wanted to mention that's a little bit different is hydrofluoric acid. That's found in rust removers and metal cleaners and brick cleaners. And the hydrofluoric acid is a little different than other acids because it penetrates pretty deeply into the tissues, and it causes deep burns, so that the actual surface of the skin might look completely normal in relation to the amount of pain and damage that's being done underneath the skin. So, and sometimes it's delayed. It takes time for that to happen, so they might not have symptoms right away, and then maybe an hour or two or a few hours later, they might start to develop some pretty severe pain. There might be a little bitterness to the skin, but usually that's about it. So that's a little bit different. The other problem with hydrofluoric acid is that with really large amounts, large exposures, the fluoride that's in the hydrofluoric acid will bind to calcium and magnesium in the body, and that will cause a drop in both of those electrolytes. And the result of that is tetany. You can see QT prolongation, other types of arrhythmias and cardiac arrest. So you do see more in the way of systemic effects with the hydrofluoric acid.
And this is important to remind people that it's really good to get a good history, because in this situation, if they're going to have symptoms onset hours later, this is the guy that, went out to scrub the mold off of the brick on the shadowy side of his house and didn't read the instructions completely and was wearing shorts and a t-shirt instead of wearing his rubber gloves and a long sleeve, long pants. And they end up getting contact with this substance that ends up causing them some injury, I guess.
That's exactly right. And a real common complaint that we hear about are people who call the poison center, and it might be a couple hours later after they've used this product, and they start complaining of pain in their fingertips. And it's because they've been using, maybe a cloth or a sponge or a brush or something, and they've gotten it on their fingers, and again, you look at their fingertips or their fingers, and they look perfectly fine, but the pain can be quite severe. So that's sort of a tip-off. With most caustics, you're going to see symptoms right away, whether it's alkaline corrosives or acids, but the hydrofluoric acid is a little different, so it will be delayed. So it is important to find out what type of product it is. If a caustic's ingested, you know, going back to all the other acids in the alkaline corrosives, if they have burns in their esophagus or their stomach, they will have symptoms. So there will be pain. They might have difficulty in swallowing. There might be pain in their stomach or in their throat. Adults and especially children will have a lot of drooling because it just hurts so bad for them to swallow, or there's so much swelling in their esophagus that it's difficult for them to swallow. There may or may not be burns in the mouth. If you look inside the mouth, the mouth may look completely fine, and the person might still have pretty severe burns in the esophagus and the stomach. So we can't rely on that in assessing the patient. You know, even if their mouth and their lips look fine, if they have some pain or difficulty swallowing, they can have some pretty severe burns further down. If they have some swelling in the esophagus, then they might have some respiratory difficulties. And so there, you know, it's important to assess their respiratory status with some of these severe burns. Respiratory tract damage can also occur because these caustics, these cleaners, have soaps in them that can cause vomiting. So it might re-expose the esophagus to the caustic, and then they can also aspirate the stomach contents or the acid or the corrosive, and that can lead to respiratory tract damage. There are complications that occur days or weeks later, and that would include perforations, gastric hemorrhaging, esophageal obstruction, upper airway obstruction. So a lot of things that happen later on. So this is not a poisoning that ends within a few hours, like a lot of your typical poisonings and overdoses. You know, they might recover in a few hours and everything's okay. This is one that can actually last weeks or months or even years. The damage is so severe that they might even require surgeries many years later. Besides finding the specific product, treatment on the scene consists primarily of the irrigation of the affected body parts, and we recommend doing that with either water or saline or Ringer's lactated Ringer's for a minimum of 15 minutes, and actually it's probably better to do that for 30 minutes, especially with some of the more severe caustics. It's a good idea to irrigate a lot longer than 15 minutes. As far as having somebody drink something to try to dilute the substance, it really doesn't do much unless you do it within the first few minutes. So by the time an EMS provider sees the patient, or by the time the physician or the nurse in the hospital sees the patient, the damage is usually already done. However, we do recommend anyway that patients who are awake and alert be given small amounts of either milk or water. What that means is usually about 2 to 4 ounces or less in a small child, and no more than 8 ounces in an adult. If you give more liquid than that, that can cause some vomiting, and that's going to re-expose the esophagus and the mouth to the caustic. Children shouldn't be forced to swallow the liquids. If children tolerate liquids and they have no symptoms at all, nothing whatsoever, then they're very unlikely to have any injury at all. We don't recommend charcoal that does not adsorb caustics or lessen the injury, so we don't want to give activated charcoal. Years ago, to recommend neutralizing the agent, so we might recommend baking soda if it was an acid that was ingested, or we might recommend giving lemon juice or vinegar if it was a substance like lye that was ingested. And what we know now, though, is that when you do that, when you try to neutralize something, it generates gas and it releases heat as well, and so that can worsen the injury. So we never want to neutralize a substance, either if it's been ingested or if it's on the skin or in the eye. Hydrofluoric acid burns are treated a little bit differently. We actually use a calcium gluconate gel topically, and that helps to bind the fluoride ion and keep it from penetrating. Another common call to poison centers I just want to briefly mention is the mixing of cleaners. People will often mix cleaners like bleach and ammonia together. They think if bleach is a good cleaner and ammonia is a good cleaner, then mix the two and that'll produce the better cleaner. But what really happens is when they mix those two together, they're going to produce a gas. And in the case of bleach and ammonia, the gas is called chloramine gas. When people call the poison center after mixing these cleaners together, they're coughing a lot, they have a runny nose, their eyes are irritated, they may have a little bit of shortness of breath. In most cases, if they're normal, healthy patients, they do well just with fresh air, you know, and liquids just to soothe the throat. Usually the symptoms will go away maybe within 8 or 12 or maybe up to 24 hours later. some people who have underlying respiratory problems, they may need some respiratory support in the short term. If an acid such as one of these toilet bowl cleaners, for example, is mixed with bleach, then that produces chlorine, which produces the same symptoms, but it is a little bit more toxic and can produce a little bit more serious pulmonary problems. So treatment of a patient who's been exposed or breathing in fumes from these chemicals or these cleaners is basically fresh air in supportive care. And again, in most cases, they do well just staying at home. However, in some cases, they will need some respiratory support. We always recommend calling the Poison Center. Call the national number, which is 800-222-1222. And be sure to have the product there with you when you call the Poison Center, because we may ask you not only the name of the product, but maybe the ingredients. Sometimes we'll actually contact a manufacturer to find out the pH of the product so that we know how strong an acid it is or how strong an alkaline corrosive it is. So it's important to get the Poison Center involved pretty rapidly after one of these exposures.
Great. Lisa, as always, just great information, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share this with the listeners here on the show, and we'll be back in touch with you next month for another segment.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to it.
That's going to wrap up another episode here of The Nursing Show. I want to thank Lisa Booz from Maryland Poison Control for sharing her tox tidbit with us this month. A good way to keep an eye out for some of those unusual situations that might present in your facility. And certainly always remember to contact your local poison control. They have a ton of amazing and great resources available for you in the healthcare community. If you'd like to contact me here on the show with some comments or suggestions about anything you've heard here, or would like to talk to me about what you'd like to see in a future episode, don't forget to email me at comments@nursingshow.com. That's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I'm not going to wrap up with music since the interview with Lisa was a little longer than normal, so I will just close out and say, as I always do, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.